Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. Tonight's program is presented in partnership with the Lafayette Library and the Learning Center's Glenn Seaborg Learning Consortium. You can find the club online at commonwealthclub.org. I'm Joy Nordenstrom, relationship coach, certified matchmaker, and CEO of Joy of Romance, Inc., and your moderator for tonight's program. I'm honored and absolutely delighted to be able to introduce our distinguished guest, Dr. John Gray, renowned relationship counselor and author of the revolutionary work, Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus. I don't think there are many people in the world who don't already know who John Gray is due to his groundbreaking book, Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus. But did you know this book, originally published in 1992, has been called the number one best-selling book of the last decade, as well as one of the top 10 most influential books of the last 25 years by USA Today? Wow. It's been translated into more than 45 languages and has sold over 50 million copies. It's evident that John has significantly influenced the way couples relate to one another over the last few decades. As a therapist, teacher, and mentor for the past 30 years, John has been working with women and men, teaching them to see their unique patterns, and in turn, helping them to more gracefully do the relationship dance with the opposite sex. He leads by example with his 26-year marriage to his wife, Bonnie, and brings amusing antidotes from his marriage to light in his work. He has written 17 books on relationships and personal growth, including his latest, which he will be enlightening us on tonight, Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice, Hormonal Balance, the Key to Life, Love, and Energy. So without further ado, please welcome Dr. John Gray.
It is such a great pleasure to be here tonight, and it was such a great pleasure to have easy parking. What a lovely, lovely place this is, and I hope we have a memorable and enjoyable evening. They've asked me to talk for about 20 minutes. I guess I'll give some amusing antidotes from my marriage and maybe a few good points, and that will be memorable, might be helpful. And then we're going to have some interview in front here. And then question and answers throughout. So if you have any questions you'd like to ask from my point of view, I'm happy to answer them. It's a thrill for me to travel around the world over the last, actually, 30 years teaching the principles of Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus. And time certainly flies quickly. Last 20 years since the book came out, I'd been teaching the ideas for 10 years, faced with tremendous opposition because it was a time of great gender turmoil 30 years ago, where a tremendous shift was taking place, which was what was called equality for men and women, and which, of course, I'm all for. But sometimes at the price of equality, we ignore that we genuinely are different. And what we want to do is create, in a sense, an inclusiveness which allows for diversity. And I'm very inclusive. At the same time, if I was talking about the difference between a chair and a couch, I'd have to make generalizations. Chairs are smaller. They have four legs. Generally, one person sits on them. Couches can have six. Three people can sit on them. Two people can sit on them. Basically, women are more like couches. There are a lot of different shapes and sizes. Men are more like chairs. They're pretty much the same, except for the easy chair where you have a handle and you lay back. Which typically, how many men in this room, let's see, have an easy chair where you can put your legs up? Raise your hands. Let me just see. Oh, really, not that many. How many men can raise their hand in this audience? Just doing a little test there. See, you know. So. Often men are hesitant to raise their hands if their wives are here. Because whenever a man raises his hand, it means she's going to have a big conversation with him about it afterwards. And men would rather just avoid that generally. You never know what it's going to be about. You never know how long it's going to take. And you never know what the outcome's going to be. As soon as a woman says the phrase, "We need to talk," a man's stress level shoots high up. And I guess what I'd like to talk about, I gave the theme for tonight's presentation is Mars and Venus 20 years later, since I wrote the book 20 years ago. And have men and women changed that much? Well, our brains really haven't changed that much. Our hormones haven't changed that much. Our genitals certainly haven't changed that much. But our roles in life have changed quite dramatically. What's expected of women has changed quite dramatically. And what women expect of men has off the chart, unrealistic. It comes to a point where a woman basically wants a guy to be a girlfriend. And when you get a girlfriend, you're looking for a man. It's a sad story. You know, they say that old thing, watch what you ask for because you might get it. Well, I've always been about 10 years ahead of the curve on this whole gender thing. And I remember 20 years ago, 30 years ago, I was, you know, as a marriage counselor, I was doing what they asked us to do, which is, you know, treat men and women as if they're the same. There really wasn't any training about how would you do therapy with a man, how would you do therapy with a woman. And pretty much for many therapists, it's still no distinction at all. However, what I found, and part of how I developed these ideas, well, they weren't taught in universities at the time, so everybody always asked me, so where's your research? I said, well, I listen to women talk 8 hours a day for a living. And for 10 years, they say the same thing. And I've never heard a man say any of those things. So it's simply my observations that the women in counseling all said the same things my wife said. So I listened to her more attentively. I'll give you an example of that. 1 week I was counseling, must have been 10 women that week or seven. Seven women that week at one point in the session made the complaint, you know, John, we're progressing, but you know what? The only time my husband touches me is when he wants sex. And I thought to myself, what's wrong with that? As most any man would think. But as a therapist, I certainly didn't say that. I said, tell me more. Well, that week I went upstairs, I gave my wife a hug. She was making dinner and I gave her kind of this hug from behind, snuck up behind her. She kind of melted and then she froze. And she says, you know, the only time you touch me is when you want sex. I said, what is wrong with that? So that was a long journey. There's a lot of examples like that. But that analysis of that distinction, because I never heard a man say, you know, John, the only time my wife touches me is when she wants sex. Can you imagine a man saying that? No, doesn't happen. There are clearly big differences between the way men and women see each other. Now, the book I'm talking about tonight is Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice, Hormonal Balance. But what's popping up in my head are two other books I'm writing right now. One is From Boyhood to Manhood, and that's the challenge our sons are going through. So I'm going to throw a little bit of that in tonight. How many people have sons? Let me just see. Whoa, I'll throw a lot more of that in there. And the other one is gender intelligence, smart men and women working and winning together in the workplace. How many women in the room are working outside the home? Let me just see. Okay, so I'll talk a little less about that tonight. But I'll talk about it because that's really popping up in my head as we did this big study. We also teach gender courses in companies. And we go in, we evaluate, we assess the company, what people are thinking and so forth. And a part of our questionnaire is ask questions. And questionnaire, you ask questions, evaluate. So we ask women and men, you know, do you feel appreciated in the workplace? And, you know, basically 80-90% of men say, yes, they feel appreciated in the workplace. And you ask women, do you feel appreciated in the workplace? And 90% of the women said no. And men, we asked, do you think that women are appreciated in the workplace? And about 20% of men. There's always 20% exception, contrary people in any question you ask. But there's 20% of men say, no, women are not appreciated in the workplace. So you think about this huge difference of women saying, I don't feel appreciated in the workplace. And all men going, what? Why not? I like that one. to talk about a bit, because it was really the beginning of my whole awakening to men and women are different, and that I am in my own business as a marriage counselor. I had a assistant who's now a very close friend. This is over 35 years ago, and her name is Helen. And Helen did everything for me. You know, I went to my office. I counseled 8 women a day and went home. She organized all those people. She collected all that money. She changed all the appointments. She did all that stuff. And she organized seminars for me, 2 seminars a month. And she handled all the finances of that, and she paid all my bills. How could anybody do all that? Helen did it. So you can see in my heart, I totally appreciated this woman. I felt like I'd won the lottery having found her, and gave her a series of raises as much as I could afford. And she was very happy with those raises. And about 2 months after the last raise, she came to me and she said, "John, I want to quit." I said, "You want to quit? Why?" My luck had run out. And she said, "I don't feel appreciated in this job." And of course, I knew in my heart, I really appreciated her. Appreciation is to value someone. So I said to her, rather than argue with her, I'd learned enough about communication skills to not argue about things like that. Somebody says they don't feel appreciated, many men will argue. Not a smart thing to do, because that's how somebody feels. So I said, "What would it look like if I appreciated you?" And she told me. She said, "You would spend more time asking me questions about what I do." And I thought, I would never thought that. When I do a job, I don't want anybody asking me questions about what I do. We actually, in our surveys at corporations, we asked another question of the men and of the women. We asked the question, "Do women ask too many questions?" And the women said, "No." And the men said, "Yes." It was the last thing on my mind is, when I'm doing a job, I don't need anybody looking over my shoulder asking me questions about what's going on, what happened, what did you say, what did you do, did you talk to this person, did they say that? Kind of feels like I got my mother telling me what to do, or criticizing me, or looking over me, because they don't trust me, they doubt me. So men don't take it as a compliment when you ask them questions, but many women do. And if you don't ask questions, then you don't know what they do. You don't know what they go through. You don't know what the journey is for her every month of, or every day and every week, of handling everything in my life. And so I said, "Well, give me a few weeks here, Helen, to express my appreciation for you, and let's just reevaluate this request." She said, "Okay." So I would just stop in at her desk every day and say, "Well, how was that meeting with so-and-so? Were you able to get that haul? What was it like talking to that client?" And then I started to get into the whole drama of her job. You know, I called so-and-so, they don't answer. You know, I was going to do this and they said that. I can't believe they changed the price on me here. Who do they think I am? I got to call them 3 times to do it. I didn't get any response on this person. She was complaining because she wanted to change her appointment. I can't just change her appointment 3 times, you know, and then everybody's upset that you're running late. You know, I had to put her in the room and then you wanted to leave. I had to calm her down, you know. So suddenly I heard that this life was not so smooth of hers. See, but from my point of view, it all got done. So I totally appreciated her, because that tends to be, men look at the outcome. You know, what's the job? What result do we want? We acknowledge that. We feel appreciated. Good job. Great job. You did it. And the guy goes, "Yep, I did that." See, it's just like he likes to take credit for the result. Well, women want to be understood in the journey. They want you to know the journey they go through. And while I never thought of that, what the outcome of that little exploration with her was, that once I began to understand all that she did and all the details and the minutiae and all the conversations and challenges that she faced and had to overcome, I had enormous appreciation for her, even more than before. I couldn't even imagine how much I could appreciate her after that. And then, you know, she kept asking for raises because she started feeling really appreciated, till finally she didn't work for him anymore. She worked at one of the top people in the country. She felt so valued. So maybe the workplace doesn't want women to know how appreciated they are, because you'll want raises or you'll quit and move on. But what we find is that there's a big challenge in the workplace when women do quit. It's a big deal. They get involved with a company, they get trained, they do well, and they leave. And it's smart for a company to keep women happy. because then you have to start all over. And women have a very unique characteristic, which is when they're unhappy, they tell a lot of people. A woman can bring a company down. She can bring it up. She can bring it down. There's a research study actually done where they interviewed women who were, you know, they just did this thing where in companies there were meetings and the woman was dissatisfied with her participation. Often women don't feel valued or appreciated in meetings. Sometimes a man doesn't feel valued and appreciated in meetings. What they found is when a woman is dissatisfied with a meeting or dissatisfied with a service and she's a client, she will talk to and tell 32 people. That's the average, 32 people. A man will talk to 3 people and bring it up only if the subject happens to cross the conversation. So women are on a mission, a purpose. If they're dissatisfied, they want to tell people. And if they're satisfied, guess what? They want to tell people. Women feel, oh, that was so great, I'm going to tell everybody. And men don't realize this. Word travels fast. And I remember I first got an inkling of this taking my wife to the movie Joy Luck Club, if you remember that movie a long time ago. And, you know, I figure it's a chick flick. I'm going to get extra points. You know, she's going to be happy with this movie. And she was. It was good. But evidently it wasn't a woman's movie for the older generation. Okay, the older than me generation, at least at that time. And I didn't know that. I watched the movie. I didn't even know that. But whatever. We're going into the movie, and there were people coming out of the movie, and it was this couple probably in their late 70s. And clearly they were dating. Okay, so, you know, they were doing that awkward thing, feeling like how they felt when they were teenagers, but they're late 70s, but not having all the hormones of a teenager. Very awkward. But anyway, so they're starting over again, doing this awkward dance, and I walked close by and I heard their conversation and I watched their body language. And the guy was sort of slumped over, about ready to die. And he just felt so bad, and he was saying to his date, "Well, what would you like to do now?" Because clearly he felt like he had failed this part of the evening. He was just so depressed. And, "Well, what would you like to do now?" And she said, "You know what I'd like to do? I want to stand here and tell every single person coming to this theater that movie was a waste of time and money." And she was making sure I heard that detail. And what she was unaware of is that when you're on a date is a time to be on your best behavior. It's not just hanging out and being in your relationship, dealing with all the duties, responsibilities. The date is supposed to be this romantic thing, this moment of the week where you can be on your best behavior. And we forget that in our relationships. We fell in love with each other when we're on dates. You know, we're on our best behavior. We treated this person really special. And then, you know, all the issues and of life, and you know, he forgot to do the vacuuming, and she didn't cook that meal, or they spent waste to heave. He or she wasted money on that investment, and the kids had this problem. You know, all the minutia of issues that come up all the time in our lives, we forget the best part of us. And part of a relationship, if we want them to thrive today, is to be aware of that. There's ways to bring out the best in our partner and have them bring out the best in us. And part of my message of men are from Mars, women are from Venus, is help us to find that place again. Because often we feel hopeless. We feel a little like jaded, or I've outgrown that, you know, and that was a stage, and romance is, you know, for young people. The challenge here, however, is that in previous generations, romance really wasn't that important. It never has been. Historically, we knew there was a romantic period, and then basically it goes away. And yet, as a marriage counselor, what I see is that couples that I've seen never get divorced if they have an active, fulfilling sex life. There's something amazing about an active, fulfilling sex life. And if a woman is having an active, fulfilling sex life, she'll say it's a very romantic relationship. And what is romance? It's like this new thing. Now, sometimes women say, "What happened to all the romantic men? Like, where did they go?" And I have to remind them, they don't exist. They never were. this is some fantasy you read in those books, okay, and keeps getting fed by the magazines. The whole sort of ideals of romance is Romeo and Juliet, unrequited love. They loved each other so much that they would die. But the reason they, for each other, but the only reason they're the romantic couple is they did die before they got married. If they got married, they'd be squabbling and fighting and having affairs and hating each other. And you know, it's what happened, you know. So if you go to indigenous cultures, you'll see that men and women live apart. They don't interact that much. They have sex, you know, they go in the woods and have it at night, whatever. But they don't really have a lot of communication together. They have clearly defined roles. We complement each other very nicely. You know, when I was down in the Amazon, flying in a little plane, landing on a dirt strip in the middle of the jungle, getting on a canoe, going for hours down the Amazon, getting off at some little spot, hiking with my wife for 8 hours with guides and translators into some Amazonian indigenous tribe there. That was called the Ashwar Indians. Sitting with the chief, he's showing me his 7 shrunken heads behind him. Really? Yeah, this is like real. They don't do it anymore because the Westerners won't come. But I asked him, I said, what's the deal with the heads? He was very proud of them. And their tradition in their tribe was that when you have a baby, you have to find a neighboring tribe and kill somebody. That's because that was their prehistoric sustainability, because the jungle can only support so many people. So if you're going to bring somebody in the world, you have to get rid of somebody. Because literally the jungle is their grocery store. You know, there's nothing there but the jungle. And they have little gardens too. But the rules there were women were only allowed in the garden. Men weren't. As if the territories, men are just not allowed. Because men will just walk over all the plants. You know, so men have their place, the jungle. And women aren't allowed in the jungle. And the reason for that is that jungle's the dangerous place. So you got the jungle, the dangerous place. You have the garden, the nurturing place. And when I'm sitting there, there's a big, huge hut like this room, really the size of this big, gigantic room. And there's a wall 3/4 of the way down, and the women are on the other side of the wall. And the men are all sort of sitting around in the bigger area doing nothing, sharpening tools, maybe talking, maybe not. And the women are all talking, all busy, nonstop, and they're on the other side of the wall. And the rules are men can't go over there. Women can join the men, but they don't want to. But men can't join the women. There's like no men allowed in there. Because women don't care about talking to men because they have women to talk to all day. Now you go to the Bushmen in Africa, and what you'll see in their tribe is that at night the women make a lot of noise. And men are real quiet. Because see, when you're hunting, you have to be really quiet. You've got thousands and thousands of years of evolution of where men were doing, quote, the dangerous jobs, the jungle jobs. In the jungle, what gives you your advantage? Being quiet. And how do you cope with stress? You sit still and you're quiet. If you look at the way men's brains are designed today, the most effective stress reduction technique for a man is to sit quiet. They have brain scans now of a man after a day of work, sits down, and blood flow stops to the whole brain. See, men have an off switch, and women don't. And this is what neuroscientists will say, is that women do not have an off switch. If you set a woman down and you do a brain scan, her brain actually speeds up. More blood flow. And you ask her, oh, what are you thinking? And she says, I'm thinking about all the things I should be doing while I'm sitting here doing nothing. And the man who's sitting on that couch, you ask him, what are you thinking? And he says, nothing. And his wife, if she doesn't see the brain scan, she says, impossible. That can't be true. You don't love me. You must be withholding from me. You don't care about me. We're not romantic anymore. We're not connecting anymore. I read somewhere 30 years ago that men talk more on the third date than any other time in the relationship. It's like, yeah, that's about third date is when you're thinking, okay, this is, I'm going to carry on more. And so let's get out. Let's get all the talking done with. Talk about our dreams and plans and where you want to go. We don't have to do that anymore. It's changed a bit since those days. Men are much more talkative. The irony is in the workplace, men talk way more than women, if it's men and women in the workplace. For men, talking is a sign of dominance. If you're the boss, you always talk last. And it doesn't matter. What you have nothing to say, you'll still, somebody talks, you're going to talk last. That's a sign of dominance in the workplace. Generally speaking, alpha male talks the most. And at home, that same alpha male will probably never talk. So in personal relationships, that's where women will tend to talk more. Now, not always, but generally speaking. So let's look at what happens when women talk more, which, by the way, I'll finish the story of the Oshawar Indians. The women do come into the room at night where the men are, and they serve this little drink. They're always coming in. And since I was the guest of the chief's wife served me his drink. Now, each wife is making their husband a special drink, and maybe you've heard of this drink. It's a root, and the women chew on that root, get all their enzymes mixed up in it, and they spit it into a bucket, and they keep spitting it in, and they're putting it on a little fire to kill the bacteria, and that's their little alcoholic drink they serve to their husbands to keep them quiet. Now, what's interesting is in these tribes in Africa, what the women know, I mean, if you look at a lot of this stuff, they are noisier. They make lots of noise. They're very talkative. They're very emotionally expressive and so forth. Nonstop. Their brains don't stop. And then when you do a study of what happens, safety in a village is that when women are making noise in a village, it scares tigers away. It actually keeps animals away, is making lots of noise. So for women, security is in making noise. And for men, security is staying quiet. And there is a place where men will make noise. And when men do make noise, it's a signal. Get away from me. I'm losing control, becoming a tiger. And women don't realize that. When men start making noise, women go, oh, tell me about how you feel. And it's the worst thing you can do. Or let's say she's making noise because she's upset. And she goes and looks at him straight in the eyes and let's talk. Do you know the worst thing you can ever do to a man if you're upset with him is look in his eyes? See, it's just such common sense. We miss all this. Imagine two guys. If you understand the way men live in the world, we'll go back to the warrior males, the dysfunctional males, the males that are beating up on people, and they don't have much front brain activity, just back brain activity. So two guys drunk in a bar, very little mental activity going. What do you do if you want to intimidate and start a fight? All you have to do is walk up to somebody and look them right in the eyes. That's it. That's the most aggressive thing you can do to a male is look him right in the eyes when you're upset with him. If you're calm and cool, it builds trust. But if you're upset, looking him in the eyes is the worst thing you can do. Now, what do women love to do when they're upset with you? Look at me. I want you looking at me. You hear me? You see me? Look at me. And what you don't know is that eye contact immediately arouses what's called the primitive brain in a man. Blood flow goes to the back part of his brain. Blood flow stops anywhere else. He's now in a defensive mode. The same thing I said when you say to a man, let's talk. Instantly, cortisol levels rise. Blood flows to the emotional part of the brain. Defensiveness, amygdala gets all excited. And when you have the stress center activated, something we should all remember is that blood flow stops to the front part of the brain to a great extent, where you can make smart decisions, where you can actually hear another person's point of view. So you can hear another person's point of view when using this part of the brain in the front, prefrontal cortex. The middle part of the brain often is referred to as the monkey brain, because you can't tell the difference between the DNA of our middle brain and a monkey's brain. And the back part of the brain is often referred to as the reptilian brain. Most of our autonomic unconscious functions are back there. You can't tell the difference between that and a reptilian's brain. Now, you can measure the reptilian brain, the back part of the brain, before a soldier goes into battle and then bring him back from battle and it's grown. When you're in danger, that part of the brain grows. and the front part of your brain shrinks. And the brain is very fluid. It's, you know, we know about brain plasticity. You can do an exercise on the piano for like 3 hours, play a little song over and over just with one hand. You actually grow matter in your brain. So it's just literally using your body, using reacting. So it affects brain changes. It doesn't change everything, but it affects sizes of things and so forth. I'm just going to pause for a moment. He's picking up questions if people have them. We can know those questions are available. And there's also a time monitor sitting in the front row. I'm looking for who that person is. You are. Okay. All right. How am I doing here?
You're doing fine, but the time's
okay. Thank you. So I ran out of time. See, I'm a male, alpha male talking it up over here. All right, I'll finish with a couple of thoughts and we'll go right into our interview, which is what's fun about the new book, and we'll be talking about this, is, you know, we have different roles. And as women are becoming more traditional male roles, women have proven they can do them. But when they do them, their stress levels are much higher. And this is statistical. This is now women in the workplace. The average woman in the workplace today, we'll call that a male jungle role, which has to do with urgency and emergency. Any job that has to do with urgency, danger, emergency, or sacrifice for money. Anything you do in those arenas raises a hormone called testosterone. Testosterone inhibits a hormone called oxytocin. And oxytocin is the hormone that lowers stress in women. So if we look at statistics, we see that a woman in the workplace average, not every woman in this room, but an average women in the workplace, their stress levels as measured by cortisol levels are twice as high as men's. And when those women come home, whether they're married or not, whether they're coming home alone or to a spouse at home, their cortisol levels double again. So a woman at home today on average has stress levels 4 times higher than a man. This is shocking. And this is just the last 15 years. And the little explanation I gave is being a student of hormones, how many women's hormones are different. We can try to find out, well, why? You know, certainly women don't feel appreciated in the workplace, and women don't feel valued. Women don't feel included. A lot of things like that. But that's the dynamic of the workplace. But also simply putting a woman in a situation of a testosterone-producing activity over time inhibits an oxytocin, which is now shown in the last decade. We've learned that oxytocin is a hormone that lowers stress in women but just puts men to sleep. So anything a woman wants to do that's going to raise her oxytocin often makes a man a little sleepy. Like a big one would be shopping. You know, men shop, but when they shop with their wives, you can see them. We're kind of, oh, gosh, how long is this going to take? You know, we're just like, is there anywhere we're going here? Our energy levels start to drop. And a lot of things, you know, very cultural things often are big oxytocin producers, and you'll see the men yawning and snoring and falling asleep, unless it's their first time. First time anything is exciting for a man. But then after that, it's, we already did that. So anyway, so what we have to understand is there's ways for men to help women generate oxytocin. There's ways for women to create more oxytocin in spite of their job at work, which inhibits it. Ideally, in 50 years to 2,000 years, how long it's going to take, the roles in the workplace will be such that it supports men in their testosterone levels and women in their oxytocin levels. That's a long journey. But at least in the meantime, we can start finding balance in our lives. And that's what my work is about. Regardless of whether your workplace is gender intelligent, you are working in that place. How can you be gender intelligent so that you find balance in your life, so that you produce these hormones that the workplace doesn't stimulate for women? And thank you very much for my signal. And now we're going to move on to our dialogue. Now, what I'd like to suggest is that we stand up and do this, because those chairs are so low to the ground and we're not on a stage. Would you come up here and we can do it? May I suggest that? Are you going to be comfortable if we do that? If you're not, why don't you be there and I'll be here, okay? Is that all right? All right. Because she's pregnant, okay, for those that can't see. And so she'd be more comfortable in these comfortable chairs. It's just you won't see me if I'm sitting in those chairs. Okay, so.
So in your very first paragraph on Venus on Fire, Men on Ice, I believe... Mars on Ice. I believe you hit the nail on the head for why we have such a high divorce rate when you said both men and women tend to love the way they themselves want to be loved, not how their partner needs to be loved. So how long do you think a marriage is likely to survive if both partners only give love in the way they like to receive love?
Exactly. Well, that's what's happening today. I think people really care more about relationships than ever before on one level. Often people don't get married because they're afraid it's going to fail, but still it's because they really want a high-quality relationship and they don't have a role model for it. And we go into relationships kind of giving what we would want, and sometimes that's not what the other person wants, particularly when it's men and women. And the reason it's showing up so much now, more so than 20 years ago when I wrote Men Are From Mars, is that our stress levels are so much higher. So a lot of what motivates us in life is to do what makes us feel good, do the things that, you know, help our body feel good. And so for women, we've proven now that one of the biggest things that makes them feel good, if the situations are right, is talking about how they feel. So a woman instinctively feels that if I talk about how I feel, I'm talking with a girlfriend, makes her feel good. So she thinks, okay, well, my husband, he seems to be not very talkative. He must need more safety to talk. Because if my wife talks to me and I just interrupt her with little solutions, like, don't worry about that, honey, I'll handle that. We already talked about that. I'll get it done. Whatever. Kind of just cuts her off. And after a while, she doesn't feel safe to talk. So, you know, she could even forget or maybe never experience that talking actually is a major stress reducer for women. Many women don't even know that to be the case. Maybe they grew up with brothers or a dad or been around men a lot. You share a little bit how you feel. Men kind of roll their eyes, make fun of you. Like, why are you getting upset over nothing? And so then she doesn't even know that talking can lower her stress. I give as evidence for that, that talking lowers stress. I can do physiology, but the evidence is on a social level, 90%, first of all, there's this huge industry out there called counseling and therapy. And 90% of the people that go to therapy are women. Because, you know, being a therapist, primarily what happens is you pay a therapist to ask you questions. That's it. Eye contact and asking questions and going, really? Tell me more. I understand. Well, you're right. I can't believe that. Oh, I remember when. So women, and this is an important point for the men in the room. You know, women pay a lot of money to have someone just listen to them. Generally, men go, why am I going to pay money to have somebody just listen to me? I can talk in the mirror if I want to talk. There's really this whole thing about talking makes you feel better. Now, why wouldn't a man instinctively know that? And why doesn't a woman know that a man, it doesn't always work that way for him? So here she is feeling like, I'd like to be able to talk and be heard. So her husband comes home and she wants to get him to talk. She thinks she's being helpful. She's giving to him the golden rule. I want to be heard, so I'm going to hear him. So now she's going to start asking him all these questions. Well, how was your day? Good. What happened? Did that work out fine for you? It was all right. You seem to be a little distressed about that. What's that about? No, I'm not. Well, now you seem to be angry. I know I'm not. Well, now it seems like you're angry at me. You know, I was not upset at all till you started asking questions. Now, part of what's going on there is that if the way a man's brain is designed is when you're under stress, the first step is to forget about whatever's bothering you. That's the first step. Then the next step is to think in your head what you're going to do about it. And if you need help in figuring out what to do about it, then you talk. So that's how men go through this whole process. First, forget it. Then think about what I'm going to do, plan. And if I need help, then talk. So when women start talking about problems, a man assumes you've already done your best to figure out what to do, and you don't know what to do, and now you're asking for my help. So I start giving you advice. So my wife's saying, oh, today was terrible. This happened, and so-and-so did this, and the bank wanted this, and we have to pay these new taxes, and Amazon's changed the whole thing, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking she's coming to me for advice. So I very calmly, coolly say, you know, honey, why don't you just quit that job? You don't have to work. And she's supposed to go, wow, I never thought of that. You know, I could just quit my job that I, because my husband said that brilliant idea. See, we think we're giving you the help you need, and you think you're giving us the help we need, and it's not what we really need. It's not what we're asking for. But even when I say that, people can kind of go, what are you saying? Men shouldn't talk. I say, yeah, men will talk, but not right away. There's a process. And Plato talked about it. Plato described it back in the long time ago, that there's the left hemisphere of the brain and the right hemisphere of the brain. And the left hemisphere has a lot to do with serious activities, which we still agree with. And the right hemisphere of the brain has to do with, we'd add to that, more intuitive feeling type things, but also playful things, fun things, recreation. And what Plato said is that you can't be on the left side of your brain all the time or you'll burn out. So you have to work hard on the left side of your brain doing noble things. Then you have to shift gears to the right side of your brain with frivolous activity. Frivolous activity we would define today as anything a woman considers to be a complete waste of time is actually the ultimate therapy for men. But see, women don't understand this, and Plato was really just referring to men, whether he knew it or not, is that women do not have the ability to shift from one side of the brain to the other. Women, you are always on both sides of the brain. See, a guy says, can't we just forget all the problems and have sex? And a woman says, what are you talking about? I can't forget all that. In Australia, I was doing an interview on sex. And we're talking about funny differences when it comes to sex. And I'll come back to the question. I see you over there. I'm not going to forget you. And coming back to sex. And a guy calls up and says, you know, I don't understand my wife. You know, we're going to go to the bedroom to have sex. And midway, she stops. And she says, oh, look at that glass. I've got to wash that. And goes back to the kitchen to wash the glass. Now, who would ever even see the glass if you're from Mars? But to a woman, the environment is very, very important. She can't turn off from it the way a man does. So we have to take all these considerations in and realize the environment is so key to women. They see so much more than men, particularly when it comes to sex. God gave men two brains and only enough blood for one at a time. So when sex is on its way, he doesn't see anything. Which women, you have to realize to be a truth of life and enjoy it. One more funny story, and then we'll come back to the serious questions. I was in North Carolina and downtime before giving a talk, and I had been away a couple of days, so I was thinking about sex. When there was a ladies' lingerie store, so I thought I'd go lingerie shopping for my wife. So I went in there. I actually know her bra size and the whole thing. I check it out in the drawer. It's a big surprise. And they go, you know my size? Yes, I looked. Anyway, so I'm in there and I asked the lady, I said, well, tell me any funny stories you know. She said, I'll tell you one. There's three women that came in to do lingerie shopping, or underwear shopping. And they were in their 60s. And most of them were rather overweight. And one of them was shopping for sexy lingerie, and the other two were buying their utility underwear. You know, grandmother underwear, you know, the whole thing. And they were looking at her wearing her sexy lingerie, making fun of her. And they, what are you doing wearing that? Who do you think you are? You're old. You're fat. You can't wear that stuff. And she had confidence, and she looked at him, and she says, you just don't understand men at all. Hey, what are you talking about? Says, when you're the only naked woman in the room, to any man, you're $1 million. The emphasis, only naked woman in the room. Okay, that's the whole thing. It's that we don't compare at that point. Once the clothes are off and the blood's flowing south, that's all there is. I mean, it's a... Okay, we'll come back to our question. So the idea there, if we don't understand our differences, we tend to often think we're giving support, when really it's not the kind of support our partner needs.
Okay. A reminder to our listening audience, you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. Our speaker today is Dr. John Gray, renowned relationship counselor, who is discussing his book, Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice, Hormonal Balance, The Key to Life, Love, and Energy. I'm Joy Nordenstrom, certified matchmaker and CEO of Joy Romance, Inc. We will be getting to audience questions in just a few minutes, so if you could start lining up at the microphone over here. And let me remind you to keep your questions short and sweet. So our time is wrapping up, but many individuals have a fairy tale notion that once they are in a loving, committed relationship, that their partner is supposed to make them happy. You shatter that idea when you say individuals need to realize that filling 90% of their happiness quota is their responsibility, even when they're in a relationship, and that they should only expect their partner to provide an extra 10%. What do you feel are the most important benefits of relationships if we are indeed responsible for that much of our own happiness?
Well, that was a wonderful summary of my book right there. I really like that very much, which is... But what I see the big mistake that happens is in relationships, we're so stressed out in our lives that we meet somebody and we fall in love and they do make us happy. So this is an illusion. It's just like taking a methamphetamine drug. It's just like taking cocaine or ecstasy or something like that. They can do brain scans on people when they fall in love. And the same part of the brain that gets excited when you take cocaine, gets excited. You're really on this sort of drug high for a while. And the experience is, in the presence of this new person, and I have no history with them at all, that they can make me so happy. That will wear off. That person does have the ability, however, to make you happier if you're already happy. And that's like coming down from the romantic high and learning to create romance. One of the biggest problems for couples is that for the first couple of years, you get this newness. It's like free hormones. Dopamine is stimulated when there's a novel experience. That means a new experience. So I've never seen her naked, so that's really a big dopamine stimulator. 10 years later, I saw that already. But now her, I haven't seen that at all. So that's very interesting to me. It's amazing. You know, I look at myself 60 years old and I see a little extra skin and my brain goes, look at that. I said, I've seen that 100 times or whatever. I said, but still, the brain goes, look at that. I haven't seen it on her. So there's this newness. But once you've been in a relationship for a while, you don't have as much newness. Then you also have this other phenomena called, and that's the dopamine phenomena. Then there's the serotonin phenomena. Serotonin is where we feel optimistic and hope. You know, we can all feel hopeful until we experience disappointment. So this is the history in a relationship. You go, oh, I'm just giving and giving and it's all working so good and I'm on this drug high, and then this disappointment, and this frustration, and this misunderstanding, and this, what I see, a series of almost comical, from my point of view, misinterpretations where we assume the worst. We assume the worst. Here's one example of that. You're dating a guy, and he's always so interested and polite and motivated and interested in you. And then you move in together, and suddenly he's like more interested in the TV set. Or for the younger generation, he's playing video games. And you're going, hey, what about me? I'm here. But see, when you didn't see him while you were dating, he was off watching TV and his video games. And so you only saw him for part of the time when he was sort of out of himself and into you. But now you're living with that person. And all these imaginations that he's always going to be into you that way are going to happen. And for a man, when he's taking you on a date, you're always happy about the littlest things. I mean, my daughters, they're just happy he called. Oh, they're all happy. He called. He did. What did he say? No, but a big conversation. He called, you know, later on. Is that you don't get all excited about that because you have all these disappointments. And that's what serotonin does. You see, when you're in the newness of a relationship, you get all this serotonin because there's no history and your fantasies can go wild. But gradually, as history sets in, you lose your serotonin. Women particularly lose their serotonin because their memory is twice as big as a man's. It is. And under moderate stress, this is now brain measurements, there's 8 times more blood flow going to the emotional memory in a woman. So when a woman's under stress, she's not only remembering in great detail everything she has to do, she's also remembering every mistake you've ever made. And so in a sense, I playfully call it temporary amnesia. She forgets anything you've ever done that was good, and she remembers every mistake you've ever made. So it's just like this, and it's temporary. It's just till the serotonin gets released, and it kind of calms the brain. It reminds you of the good stuff. And of course, foolish is the man who tries to point out to her when she says, "We never do anything romantic." He's, "What are you talking about? Don't you remember last Tuesday I did this and this and this?" As soon as you try to give one reason at that point, she's going to remember 10 other times when you didn't. So this is a time to just say at those moments, just don't say anything. Just look at her like you're stumped and just pondering, and you're trying to understand her better. That's the whole key. It's like men go, "Well, if I'm not supposed to answer and fix, what am I supposed to do?" Get to know her better. Try to understand her better and realize this is a lifelong project. Is that to really understand somebody who thinks and feels and reacts differently and do it from the point of view of, isn't she a marvel of nature? Isn't she an incredible being? Because if you do that, she's going to wonder about you occasionally, that you are an amazing marvel of nature. Okay. I don't remember the question, but that was the answer.
Okay. If anybody wants to come and ask a question, we only have time for a few. But in your book, you imply that women should take a few lessons from the family dog. Can you elaborate on that?
It can come out the wrong way when you phrase it that way. It's a delicate subject. I help women to understand men. And there's you can gain an insight from the family dog, because, you know, we all know what's a man's best friend. A dog. Even my daughters, one of the only times they ever saw me really just lose it and just break down and cry is when I hit a dog on the freeway. You know, I went back to try to save it and I just burst into tears. Just say, a man and his dog, even if it wasn't my dog, I've had dogs. So what is it that, why a man bonds so much with a dog? Dog is always happy to see him. This is like a secret, okay? It's like you can be really unhappy with a man, but do it a little later. Just that first moment, you know, just like, oh, you're here. Okay, great. Oh, gosh, honey, so happy to see you. And don't ask him. You don't have to ask him about his day. That's punishment, okay? Just, I'm so happy to see you. And you know, he's not going to go, gee, I feel so loved. No, but that's where the bonding takes place, is there's something deep, deep, deep inside of men that goes back thousands and thousands of years. When men would go off on their journeys, their hunting expeditions, their war expeditions, they go away. That's the thing. Men would go away and come back. And you really, as a woman, you hoped he would come back alive. And there's nothing more exciting for a man than to come back and be, he's alive. And if you see it, like I have this little puppy every morning, you know, when I come to greet the puppy. This little puppy is so happy to see me. It's like, you're still here. You're still alive. You're here. And it's just like this big excitement. So there's just that moment, just to know that that's a real key thing. And also, then they go back and do their own thing. And don't ever feel that you have to, like, give a man all the attention that a woman would want. See, if men want attention, they'll come get it. And the best thing for men, particularly after a stressful day, is ignore him for a while. And if he's in a bad mood, don't go ask him how he feels. Don't be real nice to him and do things for him. Ignore him and go off with your girlfriends and do something fun. Don't ever justify your unhappy life because he's Mr. Dead Man on the couch. I've seen so many men, once their wives start learning to be happy on their own, he kind of gets a little extra energy, gets pepped up like, hey, I'd like to be a part of that. And he wants to now move out of himself. So, you know, the bottom line, when I talk about Venus on fire, it's when women are under stress, their brains speed up. And the symptom of that stress is literally, on a hormonal level, their estrogen levels increase in relationship to their progesterone levels. Progesterone is like a calming hormone. Estrogen speeds up the brain. And whenever you're under stress, your body uses up its progesterone, the calming hormone, to make cortisol. And so what happens is women start having this hyper brain function at that time where they remember everything that has to be done and everybody they have to do things for, and they feel kind of a compulsion, I have to do that, I have to do that. And that's what happens to women's brains when they're not coping well with stress. For men, when they're not coping well with stress, their testosterone levels get lower and lower and lower. And so that's Mars on ice. The libido starts to disappear. The motivation in life, the fire in the belly, the wanting to achieve, the goals and so forth starts diminishing more and more and more rather than taking another form as you get older. Insurance companies today, the statistic is a man has 1 year after he retires before his first heart attack. Now, that's not everybody in this room, but that's averages. Back in the 90s, the average was he has 3 years before he's dead. But because we have such better ways to keep them alive, you know, they have their first and they get a stent or whatever it is. And but quality of life can start to go downhill for men dramatically as their testosterone levels drop. And there's reasons for this that have nothing to do with even the quality of your life and your relationships. It's just simply the environment today has got so much estrogen in it. Estrogen is this hormone, the female hormone. The average 58-year-old man has more estrogen than his wife. This is like shocking stuff. And so he'll start taking on a lot of these female characteristics, which suppress his testosterone even more. The way the brain is designed is that for thousands and thousands of years, this whole evolutionary development, we've never been exposed to massive amounts of estrogen. So estrogen, it's just a brief moment on it, but it's in carpet smells. It's in the hormones they put into the chickens and the meat to make it fatter. It's in new car smell. It's in all pesticides when they get into the body. Little tiny things, the body reacts as if they're hormones, as if they're estrogen. And estrogen lowers testosterone in men. Men are not designed to have high estrogen. The only time men would ever have high estrogen is when they're experiencing extreme stress. And what testosterone does is give them faster reaction time to deal with that stress. And when men are under extreme stress, testosterone will go too high, which could cause the heart pressure and the heart to go too fast and so forth. It wouldn't be healthy. So the body says, we're going to have to lower your testosterone level by converting it into estrogen. So as soon as you have conversion of testosterone to estrogen, your brain gets this signal when you have high estrogen that you need to stop making so much testosterone. So now we're getting the signal from the environment to men's bodies saying, don't make testosterone. So your average 40-year-old man today in America has the testosterone levels of the average 70-year-old man just 30 or 40 years ago. Huge decline in testosterone in men. In my book, I talk about certain herbs that will actually tell the brain to start making more testosterone. Unfortunately, the medical community also understands that men's testosterone levels are low, and their solution is to give you testosterone. Giving someone testosterone is an antibiotic steroid, and it will cause catabolic metabolism. It will break down your body over time, and you'll be like these sports players whose bodies wake up every morning and you're in pain because you've been taking a hormone as opposed to helping your brain, say, make more. One of the herbs there is Tongkat Ali. I talk about in the book and other herbs, but that one is super, super potent to help men's bodies get the message to make the testosterone they're supposed to make. We're not asking it to do anything unnatural. In that African tribe or that, you know, the South American tribe, if you test the men's testosterone levels, and it has been done in indigenous tribes, men's testosterone levels don't change after puberty, all the way 100 years old. This is all this Western phenomena they were all exposed to. For women, the way estrogen works is you're exposed to all these estrogens in the environment. That suppresses your progesterone levels. See, it's a balance. So now your brain speeds up. So these are things that are just happening to us. So we have to find ways of coping with that. One herb which I talk about is chasteberry extract, Vitex, which helps to increase your progesterone levels and calm your brain. Another one is a mineral that helps produce serotonin, which is lithium orotate. Now, that's not what the doctors prescribe for bipolar. That's lithium carbonate. Lithium orotate, I've helped thousands of women find hormonal balance, particularly get rid of depression and antidepressants. We're now in a society where we have 1 out of 5 women taking a sleeping medication or an antidepressant. We're in a society where 1 out of 8 boys is being given an ADD medication. And it's still being told to parents that this is safe. It's not. Even there was a whole Dr. Oz show on this, and I thought, finally, somebody's going to tell you the side effects. He had three people on a panel telling you all the terrible, terrible side effects of taking an ADD drug. And then he turns around and says, but of course, if you have ADD, you should check with your doctor, and here are the symptoms, that you don't finish projects. How many people don't finish projects? You get easily distracted. You lose your keys. Then you should go tell your doctor and get these ADD drugs. And by the way, which he doesn't say, you're going to have all these terrible symptoms, all these side effects. An ADD drug, ADHD drug, is the same thing as methamphetamines. And our parents don't have an option. I said, I saw all the boys, the hands that went up for boys, and many of you are faced with these symptoms of boys today. You know, three or four times as many boys having the ADD, ADHD, and autism, and all the whole spectrum, is that has to do with the difference in the male brain and the female brain. And 1 minute I have to explain it, I'd rather just tell you what the solution is that helps, more than proven double-blind studies to show that it helps, just as one simple one, helps more than methamphetamines, Ritalin, Adderall, and the other one, is grape seed extract, 300 milligrams a day, and vitamin C, 600 milligrams a day for any age child. Double it if you're an adult. The ADD symptom I notice is I'll be reading and suddenly my mind spaces out and I have to read the paragraph again. How many people experience that sometimes? Okay, that's ADD. See, what you should be doing is just going, just absorbing it and taking it in and so forth. Well, my whole childhood was that way because I was drinking 2 Coca-Colas a day. It doesn't happen hardly ever for me now. But if I notice even one paragraph I have to reread, I get up, I go to my medicine cabinet, which only has supplements in it. I take 300 milligrams of vitamins of grape seed extract, one of the cheapest things you can buy, and 600 milligrams of vitamin C. And I go back, and my brain's focused again. It literally, inflammation in the brain causes ADD, ADHD. Hormonal imbalance causes inflammation in the brain. So stresses cause inflammation in the brain. So what we want to do is just help counter our stressful lives with a few natural supplements that we can now find in health food stores. So, and you can always ask me questions, I want you to know, because we have a limited amount of time here. But I give free answers all the time at my Facebook site or at john@marsvenus.com. That's my personal email. And I spend hours and hours just giving out the advice over and over, just helping people, because you won't find this. Who can promote products that only cost $14 for 3 months? See, it's like it's better than any antidepressant is lithium orotate. 3 months supply for $14. Who can beat that? So you can't go to your doctor and have them say, hey, try this $14 thing. You won't need me at all. Excuse me for the doctors in the room. But that's only for one kind of situation. I don't want to simplify it to say those are all miracle little pills. They help dramatically, and sometimes that's all people need. There's other dynamics as well. But the little grape seed extract vitamin C solution proved to be just as effective as Ritalin and Adderall. See, those drugs, they don't really solve all the problem either, and they actually make the problem worse over time. I don't want to end on that depressing note. We had some other questions.
Well, we are running short on time tonight, but there are a lot of questions out there. We'd love to continue asking you. But our thanks to Dr. John Gray for his remarks here tonight.
Are we finishing? I should give an inspiring
remark. Do you want to end on something inspiring quickly?
I want to thank all of you for showing up tonight. It is a great pleasure for me to be here. And, you know, this is the year 2012, the end of the Mayan calendar. Maybe the end of time, because our lives are so busy. None of us, it just, everything seems to be happening at once. But definitely it seems like everything is speeding up, and this is an amazing time to be alive. There are incredible solutions to all of our problems, and there are incredible problems. And what's wonderful is to know that, you know, we have such great opportunity to learn new things and solve these problems. And in my own little niche of trying to help this world be a better place, what I realize is that if we are going to create a new world, a better world, which many of us in our hearts feel like, geez, something good could really happen, it's the birth of a new humanity. And when there's a birth, what's required? A man and a woman. And it's when men and women come together in a higher level of love and cooperation and respect and sharing and equality, it is that energy that comes together that can create something magnificent, something new. And of course, the sad news with that is that when you have a baby, a father will say, yes, I did that. Of course, it was 9 months of for the woman and a lot of labor. The journey here, women, that I see is I invite you to recognize your power in creating babies and creating transformation. And you have the ability to bring out the best in men. And the key here is learning to educate yourselves and how to bring out the best in men. And you will bring forth a man who can provide the support that you deserve as well. And we can look forward to a better world. Thank you all so very much. Let's give a hand to our moderator. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much for ending on the positive note. And thank you to our audiences here and on radio, television, and the internet. I'm Joy Nordenstrom, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you're in the know, is adjourned.